Sufferings, it's your boy Marty here to introduce this rip of Rabbit Hole Recap. It was brought to you by our good friends at Unchained. Unchained is here to help you better secure your Bitcoin, to make it easier for you to buy Bitcoin, and to offer you financial services on top of your Bitcoin. Everything at Unchained revolves around 2 or 3 multi-sig collaborative custody. They have an IRA product, which historically has had a fee associated with it, but they ran a campaign earlier this year. It was massively successful, and they've officially dropped their fee to 21 cents. So if you want to transition your IRA from a traditional IRA into Bitcoin, you can do so very easily via Unchained and very cheaply, 21 cents. Go check it out. Go to unchained.com and use the code RHR at checkout for any of their services, whether that's concierge, onboarding, or anything else that they're offering, and you'll get $50 off that service or product. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. CoinKite builds the best hardware in the Bitcoin space. If you're watching the video, you can see this nice, beautiful block clock behind me, but they also have the Cold Card Mark IV, which is a hardware device. It's got 2 secure elements. It's the best way to create private public key pairs in an air-gapped way offline. They also have the Cold Card Q. Update on the Cold Card Q. Comes in many different colors, so you don't just need the plain plastic see-through. They've got many different colors now. They also have a new reseller. What would we call this? A product or a program that if you want to resell Cold Cards, they've really streamlined that process. So go to CoinKite.com. Check out all their products, whether it's a block clock, a Cold Card, a Q, Sats Card, Tap Signer. They've got it all. CoinKite.com. Still don't know if we have a promo code there. Try RHR. Try it and see what you get off. Last but not least, this rip was brought to you by our good friends at Stackwork. Stackwork is a cloud sourcing platform that combines the power of humans and AI. If you've listened to us discuss Simple Proof and Digital Witness and how they secured the Guatemalan election on the show, Stackwork and their distributed cloud sourcing workforce helped secure that Guatemalan election. Right now, they're looking for mobile developers. So if you are looking for a job in the Bitcoin space that is not only at the cutting edge of Bitcoin, but also AI, hit up Stackwork, go to their careers page, find it. They're looking for Swift and Kotlin mobile devs right now. So if you're a Swift or a Kotlin developer looking for a job in the space, looking to be on the cutting edge, go hit up Stackwork. And you can go to their website at Stackwork. That's STAKWORK.AI. Enjoy this rip. Okay.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Look, and you always look surprised. You hit the go button, and then a little pop-up comes up, and you're like, what is this? Every week, it's like, you should expect that pop-up.
No.
lost in the thrill. There was some Frank Ocean playing on the streets of Congress Ave on my walk back from picking up my coffee. Now I got Frank Ocean stuck in my head.
I will say, you'd like really... We're going to be the white pill podcast from now on.
Yes,
and, we're white pilling. I think we've always been the white pill podcast, but we're going to lean into it even more. And the number one white pill is live music.
Live music, live comedy. I went to the Mothership last night. Excuse me if I'm a little groggy today. I saw the 11 p.m. show last night. I didn't get or 10:30. I didn't get home until 1 a.m. It was a great show. Live comedy is great too.
Yeah, live music, which I saw yesterday.
Oh, who'd you see?
Logan went to a Judas Priest concert last night.
I went to Judas Priest and Sabaton. I saw Sabaton and left before Judas Priest came on.
And you went to a jazz show after, didn't you?
Yeah, and I went to swing dancing where they had UT Jazz Band.
Yeah, for you freaks who are unaware, Logan is a prolific swing dancer. He's been caught.
You've mentioned it on the show. you mentioned on the show.
Logan has been caught in a swing dance flash mob by Sahil before.
But that makes me feel better, Marty, because my lady and I went to a live show the other day, and like we got out at like 11:30. We're like, it's so late.
I got slapped in the face at 7 a.m. this morning. I was like, please, no.
Yeah. Getting old.
We are getting old. No, we're not. Old is a mindset.
No, we're not old. We're getting old.
Yeah. I'm going to stay young. Forever young. It is mindset, freaks. A lot going on in the world. Things are picking up. A lot of white pills on this list. We've got a tight hour and 20 minutes between now and the time at which I need to hop off to go record a podcast with Matthew Pines. A lot going on in the world. Let's open up. I think we've been skipping the dashboard. Actually, no, we got to it last week, but we have been missing it. So let's not forget about it. We're currently sitting at 67,630 cuckbucks per Bitcoin. Per cuckbuck, you're going to get 1,479 sats. We're at a $1.34 trillion market cap. We're at block height 867,322, which means we had a difficulty adjustment between last week's episode and this week's episode. It happened a couple of days ago, or a few days ago now at this point. It was an upwards adjustment of 3.9%. I believe that is yet another difficulty all-time high. We are 1,574 blocks away from the next free target, which is estimated to be on November 4th. We're going to have a difficulty adjustment right before the U.S. election pops off here in the United States. That was redundant. The U.S. election, United States election in the United States. It's obvious. U.S. election is descriptive of where it is. And right now, it's looking like we'll have another upwards adjustment of 4.7%. Blocks been coming in at 9 minutes and 35 seconds on average. There are currently 98,440 transactions in Clark's teeny weeny mempool. And if you go over to mempool.space, they have 199,027 transactions. Fees manageable right now. 7 sats per V-byte for a high priority transaction. That is the state of the network and where it stands today. And forgot to mention, Stash Odell is officially back, and it's great to see him.
I'm getting ready for the bull market. Let's go. Marty humbly called for $1.8 million coin last rip, and I had to shave for the occasion.
Yeah, it's great to see Stash Odell back in action. Speaking of action, the fervor in the world of Bitcoin, people are paying attention over the last 16 hours, has been over Microsoft. The world was made aware via some SEC filings that were filed yesterday by Microsoft, one of the biggest corporations in the world. And they have a shareholder vote coming up. They have many things they're voting about, many proposals they're voting about at their next shareholder meeting, which I believe is December 10th of this year. And one of the proposed votes is an assessment on whether to consider investing in Bitcoin. That is how they phrase it. I don't think that's good framing, but it is officially on the shareholder vote.
They're voting on whether or not to consider it.
Yes. Whether they should go out and do an assessment on it. The board is recommending that shareholders vote against this particular proposal, and they're saying that they're a large corporation. They're continually talking about treasury strategy and have discussed Bitcoin internally. It seems that this particular proposal is on the shareholder vote because there's an activist investor that owns a lot of Microsoft stock that wants to make it a point to make sure that the corporation is talking about Bitcoin. So this seems like an activist action that got it on to the shareholder vote.
Yeah, this is something that we've discussed at length with our good friend Andrew Hones, who we mentioned either last week or the week before is the co-founder of Battery. If you recall, he was the one who wrote the piece on pensions in the Institutional Investor. website or newsletter or whatever that place is. But what he theorizes is that we're going to start to see kind of similar to what happened with ESG and DEI, that more and more activist investors will push these public companies into adopting a Bitcoin treasury strategy. And this is kind of the first, I don't think he was involved in this one, but this is kind of the first tip of that spear, maybe.
Yeah, what do we think? I mean, everybody has been, again, talking about this on X, Doster, trying to ascertain what's going to happen December 10th, looking at the largest shareholders. I believe Vanguard is the largest shareholder at around 9%.
It's probably BlackRock and Vanguard, right?
Yeah, BlackRock's too, and then you have State Street, the whole gambit of those passive money managers. And that's the big question, despite the fact that the board has recommended that shareholders vote against this proposal. People are trying to figure out, like, will the issue be forced?
Yeah, I mean, this one probably won't pass. But I think it's a tease for the future. I think usually, and I mean, I'm not a specialist in this regard at all, but I think usually votes go along the proposals, along the recommendations of the board. I'd be surprised if that weren't the case. And obviously, as we said in the beginning, even if this was a vote for yes, it would be them considering it, which is also kind of lame that they're not even open to just doing some kind of bare minimum research and analysis on it. Like, they're against considering it. But I think what we're going to see happen is a trend that we've been watching here, right? Which is every individual, every company, every government, will realize eventually that the game is to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible, to be profitable in Bitcoin terms, and to increase that stack. The most profitable, most valuable businesses in the world will be holding large sums of their treasury in Bitcoin. It is the best place to store your wealth. And so will Microsoft buy Bitcoin? The answer is yes. The question is when.
Yeah. And there are many people out there saying this isn't big news. This is just gimmick. This is a gimmick by an activist investor to try to get some free marketing for Bitcoin. But I don't think it can be overstated. You really touched on it. Like, this Bitcoin focused activist investor is a trend that's going to continue. And I would not see this as a mere gimmick. I think this is a strong signal. There are people with immense amounts of wealth. Like, if you are a shareholder that has enough stock to be able to get a proposal on a shareholder meeting vote, like, that means you have a lot of money. And so there are coiners out there with a lot of money that are able to essentially use that ownership stake that they have in one of the largest companies in the world to force an issue. And that should not be underappreciated. Like, that is a pretty massive deal.
Yeah, just getting it on there in the first place. Obviously, we see Larry Fink and BlackRock aping into Bitcoin in a big way. Larry is quickly becoming one of the most prolific Bitcoin influencers in the world. And so the fact that they are, you know, the top shareholder of pretty much every publicly traded company should speed up this trend, I expect. And I would just say one thing to Marty's point, that there's a lot of rich people out there that own Bitcoin. The last few years, I've been heavily focused on trying to raise money for Bitcoiners, whether that's on the 1031 side or OpenSat side. And holy shit, guys, we are all so poor compared to some of these people.
they're out there. That's what is popular in Bitcoin, Twitter, Noster, are the very rich people like Saylor, Ricardo Salinas, others that sort of like the spotlight while marketing Bitcoin and being influential within the sphere of Bitcoin narratives and being top of mind when people think of rich people in Bitcoin. That's just the tip of the iceberg. There's way more silent rich people that are into Bitcoin.
the crazier ones are the quiet ones.
Yeah. And they're out there. And there's a lot of them. But is it big? We'll see. So the shareholder vote is December 10th. So we've got about a month and a half until that comes. And as you can probably tell by the link that we share, these packages have been sent out to shareholders to vote via mail. And you can vote online. The mail voting is like just like a fiat thing that people still have to do. You still have to mail.
Well, if you use like, if you're just like an average investor or whatever, like I think like Robinhood and Charles Schwab and stuff, they just send you an email and you just vote online. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. December 10th. We'll see how that, which way that breaks for or against. And I think either outcome will be beneficial for Bitcoin because it will be top of mind. And do not be surprised if a similar proposal begins to pop up on other large publicly traded companies. Shout out to Macroscope on Twitter. Incredible follow if you're not following him. He broke this story as the details were made bare on the SEC.
I mean, full-time Bitcoin makes an interesting point in our secondary chat, not our main Noster live chat, which you can get at rhr.tv/stream. That BlackRock was, you know, the major champion behind the ESG activist votes.
Yes.
So like this is a format that they're used to doing. Maybe they start doing it with Bitcoin.
Yeah. Maybe they do. Speaking of breaking news, this story dropped literally within the last hour, which is LightSpark announcing a new layer 2 that they're calling Spark. I've read the Bitcoin Magazine piece, but I think our friend Arbed out here is more technically inclined to understand what is going on here. And so here's his synopsis of what it looks like LightSpark is building with their Spark product. So LightSpark announced their own layer 2 called Spark today. Details still coming out, but sounds like they've built something like a state chain plus atomic swaps and connector transactions, ? Sounds interesting. No code yet on their GitHub page. Then he links to the Bitcoin Magazine. So this is interesting to see.
So, I mean, LightSpark is an interesting beast. So David Marcus, who's ex-PayPal and then ex-Facebook, he tried to make Facebook's like Bancor-style currency and then failed and then moved into Bitcoin in a big way. Launched LightSpark. LightSpark is heavily funded by A16Z. They raised a shit ton of money pre-product. It was kind of like heralded as like the big dogs, the traditional Silicon Valley elite coming into Bitcoin. LightSpark's interesting because their whole strategy stems from this idea of not getting money transmitter licenses and not having to deal with all of those regulations. And the way they are attempting to do that is by building self-custody first, basically B2B self-custody first stuff. And if anyone who's trying to build self-custody stuff on Lightning quickly starts to see a lot of the pain points that exist there. I mean, every to receive on Lightning, you need to be online. It's an interactive protocol. You have to be online to receive and obviously to send. You have liquidity constraints where you have liquidity locked up. And then, of course, at the end of the day, every Lightning channel has at least two on-chain transactions, the open and close, which can get prohibitively expensive in a high-fee environment, particularly if you're trying to onboard people in smaller amounts. So they've seen these pain points, and they seem to be launching their own layer 2. That's a state chain-esque system. As Marty said, like we literally read it like 15 minutes ago, and there's no code yet. So we'll see how that works out. I will say for Mercury, the way that – so Mercury chain, or I think that's what they call it, Mercury layer, is an existing state chain implementation. And the trade-off balance there is it is technically self-custody unless the state chain operator is colluding with your – counterparty, then money can be taken. And that when I say colluding, that also could mean, obviously, that if your counterparty is the operator of the state chain, you are also trusting them in that situation. So it's a little bit of a gray area.
Trade-off.
As opposed to something like Lightning, where, you know, that is a native Bitcoin multisig between you and your channel partner, and either can unilaterally close it out at any time. But it seems like they mixed and matched some things here, and they made a point of saying that any participant can settle on chain at any point. Presumably, if you have a smaller amount, you could technically do it, but the fees would be prohibitively expensive for you to do it. But that seems key. And I would say that it's particularly interesting given the recent controversy over Saylor's comments on self-custody, where Saylor was on, I guess it was like a TradFi podcast, where he said the only people that self-custody are crypto anarchists that are committing tax evasion. And it was you know, a pretty negative slant onto people using self-custody. I will say that Saylor has walked it back since then on Axie's, like anyone should have the right to self-custody, and people will use different types of custody situations that work best for them. But it's interesting seeing the dynamic at play there, right? With someone like Lightspark trying to build self-custody first, and obviously someone with Saylor who at the end of the day, you know, his main product is MSTR stock, right? MicroStrategy stock. Which is inherently a trusted third party. And then he uses institutional grade trusted third parties to actually store the Bitcoin. So it's like two different perspectives on Bitcoin, but both from a, you know, like a, almost like a traditional investor mindset, right? Or a, like a TradFi mindset.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned it earlier too. Not only is it applying like a TradFi mindset to custodying, moving Bitcoin, but like the acknowledgement that Lightning alone is not going to get to the end state of usability that people want. And Logan, pull up the James O'Byrne tweet. I mean, this has been, I mean, we've talked about the trade-offs with Lightning, its shortcoming, not shortcomings, but its product market fit at this given point in time is very clearly B2B movement of funds with instant settlement. So large exchanges, and that is leading to some debate within the industry of, has Lightning been this distraction? James O'Byrne tweeted out earlier today, at some point we're going to have to own this. And he's quote tweeting Ray Youssef, who's trying to say that Lightning, the Lightning network simply does not work. I don't think that's true, but we'll get into it. But James does make a good point here. Protocol development for the last few years seems to have made an implicit assumption that the Lightning network is the thing that's going to help us scale. I know that was me in 2016, 2019 to 2019. And consequently, that has allowed Core as a project to avoid thinking about covenants, which will need to enable layer twos usable by people who don't want to manage directional liquidity or trust a third party, a la Liquid / Fediment. If you go down, Alex Berg hops in the conversation there, and they have a good back and forth. We don't have to go through the whole thing, but Alex, and I think I agree with his perspective on this, that Lightning Network is the thing. It has proven product market fit, and it does have some shortcomings that do need to be worked on and fixed. And I think through time moving forward and things like ARC coming to the table, state chains, atomic swaps, we're still in this exploratory phase of how we're going to scale Bitcoin, particularly where Lightning fits into that scaling solution as well. And I just wanted to bring this up because I don't think Lightning Network has failed. I do think what's Lightspark just launched is an acknowledgement that it's not going to be Lightning alone. We're going to need to get creative with creating interoperable protocols that sort of leverage Lightning and extend its usability, increase and improve its user experience at the end of the day. Channel management is a big thing that's going to need to be solved.
Yeah, I mean, you can't solve it. It's inherently interactive, right? At the end of the day, I think in technical circles, these trade-offs have been very clear for a long time. I think we've been pretty clear about it on this show specifically. But where we see a lot of these pain points happen is that influencers are always, almost always sugarcoat everything, right? And it becomes a messaging issue. So for a lot of people, have heard that lightning fixes everything, right? Because if you speak in absolutes and you remove personal responsibility from the equation, your tweet will bang harder. So that this is the result that we're facing with this. This is something we saw early days with Bitcoin too, when it was sold as a way to send cheap anonymous payments. And what we're seeing, with anyone with eyes could have seen from early on, is that that's not the case. That's not how you should sell Bitcoin. That's not ethical messaging. It doesn't actually make any sense. At scale, Bitcoin will be quite expensive to send around, and it is not inherently anonymous. So you see these pain points in almost every new technology that happens in terms of messaging missing, not necessarily, misleading people on how these tools actually work. Lightning is incredibly effective as this like interoperable glue between all different types of protocols and entities. I mean, it's a interoperable protocol for batch Bitcoin payments. And as such, it works incredibly well. And something that we're seeing that with right now, and it's not necessarily just B2B, right? Because you can be a professional Lightning node operator and not be a business, and you can interop with the global Lightning network. And we're starting to see that with eCash mints, for instance, where that piece of the puzzle allowed eCash to come into play, where eCash now, instead of being built on US banks, where you have all those regulatory issues, is built on top of a foundation of Bitcoin and is interoperable using Lightning. But at the end of the day, expecting, more than just the ride or dies running Lightning, their own Lightning nodes and operating in a fully sovereign way with Lightning is just completely unrealistic and just not going to happen.
Yeah. And in that thread with James and Alex Berg, Alex basically says, and I think this is important because, like you said, many people have marketed Lightning as this panacea to scaling and payment problems, which simply is not the case. And I think we've been good, particularly since the early days, because we were playing with Lightning like right when it launched, and setting up channels was not easy or intuitive. And remember, like, cost is
a mental burden. It's a mental burden, and it's a massive friction point to explain to someone that they can't just immediately start receiving Bitcoin. And it can be prohibitively expensive. It'll always be cheaper than on-chain Bitcoin because it's batched Bitcoin transactions, but it inherits a lot of the costs, particularly when you're just getting set up as on-chain Bitcoin. And for people that are using smaller amounts and are just getting started, it's completely impractical. Like, that's just not going to happen. We've seen great strides on the mobile side, apps like Zeus and Phoenix that try and, make it easier for users to do it all on their phone and still maintain pretty good self-custody guarantees. But it still always will have a significantly more friction than a custodial alternative or maybe something like this, like a state chain alternative. So we'll see how it plays out. But I will say that anyone who's used on-chain Bitcoin and then used self-sovereign Lightning, you immediately see it, right? Like, on-chain Bitcoin is beautifully simple. I can give you an address. I can never talk to you for 10 years. And I can disconnect all my devices from the internet. I don't even have to generate the address online. And you can always send me payments. They just fucking work.
Yeah. Yeah, in that thread, Alex said, Lightning is the thing. And James says, how can you say that? Aren't you working on Arc? And Alex makes a very good point, which you talked about, is like, Arc would not be possible without Lightning, without this interoperable layer. Like you mentioned, same with the eCash mints.
It was so important.
Yeah.
Many such
framing. Think about framing, narrative.
Something I've been seeing lately, just since I'm a broken record, I've been seeing lately with Noster, right? It's like people are selling Noster as this happy place that doesn't have all the, you know, negative social ramifications of modern social media, modern corporate social media, that you don't have the trolls and the haters and like revenge, you know, like seeing people like get killed on the street and stuff, and it's just happy. It's like, no, it's just because Noster's early. If you sell people on that, they're just going to be disappointed in 10 years. If Noster is successful, it's going to have the best and the worst of humanity all in an open communication protocol. Like, there's nothing inherently about Noster that makes it that everyone's so happy and friendly with each other. It's just because it's early.
No, I experienced that when I, like, earlier this year when I started using Noster daily, and I'm posting like economic charts and talking about the economy, and people are like, get that like suit talk off of here. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, this is this is what I like to talk about. I'm gonna post it on Noster. If you don't like it, you don't have to follow me. Yeah, there was this sort of early first mover Noster community that thought it was going to be this like hippie utopia. It's not the case.
People still sell it that way. Because in a lot of ways it still is. It's a relatively small community. It still requires a decent amount of friction to use. So as a result, like, people need to actually show proof of work to actually get on it and communicate on it in a big way. But as that friction reduces, as the number of users grows, there'll be everything on Noster, right? There'll be all sorts of conversation that's happening there. But my point is, this is a theme that we see constantly with new tech. Is that it's sold and kind of glossed over, not based in technical reality ways, because it's an easier way to sell something. And the way incentives work is people will end up doing that because it's effective.
Yeah. It's important to be going back to the overarching message of this section of the show and this topic. Just accept Bitcoin and the layers and the Noster for what it is. Try to be as honest as possible, because that's when you're going to get the best results, when you're honest of the shortcomings, the pain points, the issues that need to be focused on. Painting it as this panacea, it works today, it just doesn't do anybody a disservice. You market it a certain way, people use it, it doesn't work the way you market it, that's a bad first user experience. Whereas if you're just truthful about the state of all these different protocols and where they are, and say, yeah, it has a lot of potential, however, its full potential has not been realized, there's a lot of work to do, it's much better. People go in with better expectations, more realistic expectations, and aren't as let down when things don't turn out the way that they were told it would.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like, it's not just... It's not even just that too, right? Because what you also see is you see a massive misallocation of capital and resources based on bullshit, right? And we saw that with Lightning, right? Like, how many pitches do we get at 1031 that was just basically bullshit with Lightning mixed in? It's like, oh, well, we're going to do this on Lightning. It's like, no, there's nothing here. And also, if on-chain fees go up, your whole business is fucking wrecked. Or, you know, we're doing this on Lightning and it's a custodial wallet that if they get any kind of traction, they're going to have to add KYC, which adds friction and destroys the whole model. So we saw that time and time again, and, you know, billions of dollars were wasted on a lot of this bullshit.
Not billions, millions.
We're starting to see it. Yeah, fair enough. We don't have that much money in the Bitcoin space. But also just thousands of hours of people's time and resources, right? More recently, we started to see that with all this stuff where it's just like a multisig where they're like, oh, it's a Bitcoin layer two. That was another thing that we started to see during quote unquote Bitcoin summer or whatever.
Yeah. Season two.
Oh, season two, right. That's what it was.
Bitcoin season two. Beware.
They're like, people would come up with like graphics. They're like, there's 60 different Bitcoin layer twos. It's like, no, there aren't.
Be truthful. Be aware. Stay vigilant, freaks. because the central banks are paying attention. There were two papers written in the last 2 weeks by two different central banks, European Central Bank and the Minneapolis Fed. Put Bitcoin on the map. The ECB, they wrote their paper on October 12th. And
this was the better one.
Yeah, well, this one is...
it's better. It's better because it mentioned you, Marty.
It mentions me. The European Central Bank is reading my newsletter, which is a little scary to think. I'm definitely on some list, or they're on my list, actually. The ECB is on my list, my newsletter list. This is when we know we've made it.
And it was like it was a recent piece they had cited too, right? It was like a month ago.
I read it a couple months ago. Yeah. So the ECB, we'll touch on what they we'll touch on my newsletter that is referenced and cited in the ECB paper. But the overarching argument that the ECB is making in their paper is that they're saying Satoshi had an initial vision. Satoshi's vision was that Bitcoin would be this payments network, and along the way, that original vision that Satoshi had was corrupted. It has not succeeded as a payment network and instead turned into nothing more than a protocol that enables a speculative scarce asset. And they basically fearmonger, talking to all the no coiners out there, saying these Bitcoiners are going to get extremely rich. It's going to go to 10 million euro per coin, and they're going to benefit massively at the detriment to all the no coiners in the world. And the paper is just filled with straw men, mischaracterizations and terrible arguments from an economics perspective.
I love the title that No Bullshit Bitcoin used. No coiners may be impoverished by rising Bitcoin prices. It's like, it's literally a central bank paper on have fun staying poor.
Yeah.
And the one thing that they got wrong is, I mean, well, they got a couple of things wrong. First of all, they spelled Cathie Wood's name wrong, which is
extremely disrespectful.
Yeah, I mean, that one always gets me. A lot of people spell their name wrong. The second thing is the way to counteract this is to stay humble and stack sats. Like that is how you make sure you don't get impoverished by a move to a Bitcoin standard. The third thing is Bitcoin doesn't, moving to a Bitcoin standard, having a new money that is not controlled by any individual entity or government, it does not make someone poor. If anything, it gives you a fair measuring stick, a fair way for people to store their value. Now, it's not going to solve financial inequality, but what it does do is it stops the corruption of the money system that we all use to actually store our wealth. So everyone's at an even playing field. So in a lot of ways, it does quite the opposite. Like the actual fiat system is making people poorer, because if you're not financially savvy or hire someone to manage your money for you that is financially savvy, then you're working really, really hard and you're never going anywhere because your savings are getting devalued over time.
Yeah, I think this is the most important point to make to call out in the ECB's paper, is that they position and Bitcoin as a zero-sum network, which is completely not the case. And the timing of, I mean, the paper dropped October 12th, but shout out to Noster. This news broke on Noster, obviously blew up on X too, but I forget the freak who tagged me in the post, some European freak. I think it was Lost Something. Was the first to surface the paper, surfaced on Noster first. That's where the news breaks these days. And it blew up over the weekend last week, and I became aware of the paper like hours after I recorded with Parker for TFTC. That episode dropped yesterday, and the timing couldn't be more perfect, because Parker from First Principles walks through the logic to why Bitcoin isn't zero sum at the end of the day. And like, there is a high likelihood that Bitcoin, the price goes to $1.8 million next year. We keep going up and to the right. We accumulate a large market cap, and many people are adopting Bitcoin, but not everybody does. And it's not zero sum. Even if you don't adopt Bitcoin, you were going to reap the benefits of others adopting Bitcoin. And Parker and I's conversation really revolved around business owners adopting Bitcoin as a treasury asset and as a means to ensure that they can provide goods and service to the market reliably as the fiat currencies get debased. Because the ECB, the Minneapolis Fed, all these central banks are making it harder to coordinate economic activity as they debase their currencies. Like, money is a coordination tool to accumulate capital and build goods and services to deliver to the market where there is demand. And as you inflate your currency, particularly at a quickening pace, it makes it harder to do that coordination. And so if you have businesses, particularly that are accepting Bitcoin as payment or building a treasury in Bitcoin, in better money that is increasing in purchasing power and cannot be debased, they are going to have more reliability in terms of being able to actually have their business function in the future. And whether you adopt Bitcoin personally or not, you are going to benefit from that, because the businesses that adopt Bitcoin and leverage Bitcoin's scarce properties to facilitate their business are going to be able to provide you a good and service in the future, whether or not you have Bitcoin, which is net positive for the economy overall. And so that, I think, the core of the European Central Bank's paper is flawed in the sense that it tries to market Bitcoin as a zero-sum network where only the people who hold it benefit. It's objectively false. People that hold Bitcoin can go do things with that Bitcoin that provide value to people who don't have Bitcoin. And then on top of that, they're like arguing that people who are worried about the Bitcoiners impoverishing the rest of the world should go lobby their governments to make laws to make Bitcoin illegal.
Yeah. I mean, and you also have the other piece, right? Which is that it doesn't matter when you adopt Bitcoin, it will still benefit your life. Now, if you adopt it earlier in the adoption cycle, you know, presumably it will benefit your life in an even greater way. But just the idea of having money that you can spend and save without permission that increases in purchasing power over time is just a net benefit to anyone who uses it, regardless of when they use it.
I do want to note it. I want to note it on the record publicly. I reached out to Jurgen, one of the co-authors of that ECB paper. I DM'd him on Twitter. He responded very polite. We had a very polite back and forth, invited him to come on the show and debate the merits of the paper and Bitcoin more broadly. He said he had to get back to his communications team. And then he came back to me 2 days later and said the communications team said that it's probably not a good idea to come on the podcast. So
like the ECB told him he couldn't come on the podcast.
Yes.
Damn. That's pretty weak.
It is pretty weak.
Jurgen, you should just come on the show. It's a great idea.
It is.
What's the worst thing going to happen? Why are you scared of open discussion? And open discussion is important.
I do want to, very polite back and forth. Very polite. That's what I think we should be polite. Be friendly to the no coiners, the pre-coiners. Pre-coiners. Yeah. The pre-coiners are going to be on our side eventually. You got to be polite.
The Bitcoin deniers really hate when you call them pre-coiners. It triggers the hell out of them. What about, this was actually like a pretty big week. A lot of things happened. I mean, everyone was wrapped up in the Saylor comments. I'll just say like one more time that everyone, if you're an individual, the power of Bitcoin self-custody or a business, the power of Bitcoin self-custody is impossible to overstate. Like, you can store this thing without any counterparty risk whatsoever. That has only been possible really with something like gold. But the benefits that Bitcoin provides an individual or corporation compared to gold, things like being able to move it around really easily, verify it really easily, store it really easily, use multi-sig where there's no central point of failure, is just insane. Like, it is a superpower. Like, you have the ability to have a very easy superpower. And you can choose whether or not you want to use it or not. But anyway, there's been a lot of focus on the Saylor conversation. The really crazy thing was, to me, was Paul Tudor Jones on CNBC.
PTJ, baby.
Who basically just laid it all out there.
Our boy Paul. Our boy Paul is back in the news.
The only path forward for the U.S. government at this point is to inflate, inflate, inflate.
Yeah. Not only him, but another
taxes.
Another coiner at that echelon of high finance, Stan Druckenmiller, didn't explicitly say positive things about Bitcoin, but it has been made public that his family office has a 20% of their portfolio is short U.S. Treasury bonds, which is essentially a bet that would confirm what they think. I mean, that what PTJ is, our boy Paul, is saying too, is going to come to fruition.
I mean, that's what Paul said. Paul said, I mean, he's not directly short bonds, but he said he has no bonds, period. Yeah. And he's long Bitcoin, long gold, long NASDAQ. And he's basically playing an inflation play here. And I think for the average person, obviously the best way to play that is to hold on stacks. That's about it. But basically what Paul Tudor Jones on Squawk Box basically did like the 5-minute suit pitch of Mandibles then Bitcoin Standard. It was what he did.
It was a good pitch. It was a good pitch. Yeah, it's happening. And I mean, just to continue the central bank, we didn't even talk about the Minneapolis Fed paper, which took a different angle, similar in the sense that they said Bitcoin's probably going to appreciate value pretty significantly. And they proposed that you should essentially cut off the exit ramps for the plebs, have the government accumulate as much Bitcoin possible, and then just issue as much debt as possible, knowing that you have the scarce asset in the treasury to enable you to do that. So they were essentially like, the government should have all the Bitcoin and we should just debase the currency and make all the regular people use the shitty currency.
Yeah, no, they were like Bitcoin is bad because it doesn't allow us to run an irresponsible currency. Insane.
It should not be. We should all appreciate the gravity of the, like, we are at the point where for the longest time, and still it's also caveat this with all of these central banks have many different economists working for them, many different member banks with many different opinions. We see that just with vanilla monetary policy within the Fed. All the Fed governors have different opinions of what the Fed should do. So these are the opinions of individuals within these central banks and not indicative of the overall position of each individual central bank. These are individuals within these banks who have these ideas, but I still think it's signal. For the longest time, the central banks have been like, Bitcoin's nothing, don't worry about it, speculative bubble that'll eventually go to zero. But now you have some members of these banks explicitly saying Bitcoin's probably going to go up a lot in value, and there's some things that probably need to happen to make sure that doesn't happen. We've said it many times throughout the past, but this does, it's not even like then they fight you. It's like then they acknowledge that like Bitcoin is here to stay.
No, and this is before the then they fight you.
Yeah. What is it? First they laugh at you. First they ignore you, then they laugh at you. They are laughing. They're saying,
this is the laughing part.
Yeah. Then they fight you, then you win. Yeah, it's pretty insane. Particularly that they came out back to back.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully they keep giving us press.
Yeah, the Minneapolis Fed. That's the Reserve, Federal Reserve Bank branch that Neil Kashkari is the president of. Somebody said Bitcoin is worthless less than a month ago. There's a president of the bank that just wrote a paper that says Bitcoin's going to go up in value. If we don't do something, we're not going to be able to issue as much debt as we need to. They're not sending their best. They are not consolidated over there on the central bank.
It really is. That is in both cases, they were attempting to attack Bitcoin, and they're just some of the best Bitcoin show pieces that we've seen from central bankers.
Yeah. Well, and that it is actually a beautiful juxtaposition of, again, like it's not a consolidated front on the central bank.
Right. They're a little bit distributed. It's like a federated system.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like, just on what's actually happened, they don't have like a consolidated narrative about what Bitcoin is. Like, again, Kashkari is saying Bitcoin's worthless, and then members of the bank that he's president of, saying it's not worthless. Like, we need to figure this out so that we can issue debt. That's the, like, juxtapose that to Bitcoin, tens of thousands of individuals around the world running node software. That is a consolidated front. That it's like, no, this is the rules of the system. This is how it works. And we all agree. I think it's just like a beautifully poetic that on the fiat central banking side of things, they can't even agree on a basic thesis of what Bitcoin is and what it's going to do in the future and how it pertains to their monetary policy. In Bitcoin, it's a consolidated front. Everybody knows what's happening.
I mean, to be fair, like, both papers weren't, neither paper was, I mean, the first one, the ECB one, got a lot of things wrong. But one thing they did get right is if you don't stay humble and stack sats, you're going to be worse off than if you had, right? They got that piece right. And then on the Minneapolis Fed one, like, they were completely correct. Like, that's the value, one of the value props of Bitcoin is that they cannot run a shitty currency when the option of Bitcoin exists. It's like when Lagarde said that we can't have an exit ramp, right? That Bitcoin represents this exit ramp that we can't have. And she tacitly acknowledged that one of the key value props of Bitcoin is that it gives every individual, every company, every government in the world the ability to opt out of this shitty system.
Yeah. And perfect segue to the next topic, which is the fact that Denmark is considering an unrealized cryptocurrency capital gains tax next year. There was a lot of misinformation about this. Many people saying Denmark has levied an unrealized cap gains tax on Bitcoin. It's a proposal right now. If it passes, it would be an unrealized cap gains tax on Bitcoin starting January 1st, 2026. So you'd have a year to figure it out. Danish tax minister Rasmus Stoklund stated that many Danish crypto investors have been unfairly taxed under the standard capital gains tax. He suggested that new tax rules should establish a simpler method for taxing crypto assets. That seems positive, but
yeah, no, he's saying it's better for people. No. I mean, we've heard that one before.
Yeah. But
I don't pretend to understand Danish tax law, so.
Neither do I.
I thought this was interesting because, well, for like capital gains tax in general, like the name of capital gains tax is a quite clever psyop. Like, it's a savings tax. It's a tax on savings. If you told people that you're going to tax their savings, it sounds a lot worse than if you say capital gains. Now, unrealized capital gains tax takes that psyop a little bit further. And it's a forced seizure of savings, right? It's you're seizing savings before they're actually even realized and used. Now, the reason I thought this was particularly relevant is because we have heard unrealized cap gains more and more, including Harris has
floated proposed it.
Yeah, floated it, I guess, in one way or another. And I do want to caution people that a lot of the issues with trying to enforce or implement something like that at scale, in terms of like large rich people having, you know, rich people having a large portion in, you know, a single company or something, and that affecting the market, Bitcoin is like unique, you know, is uniquely well suited for the enforcement and usage of something like this, because it's liquid, 24/7 saleable, global market. Like if a small unrealized cap gains was implemented, it wouldn't really negatively affect global Bitcoin markets. Like, it's liquid enough that it could handle that. But if you did it to Elon and Tesla or something, then you could see it would actually take, you know, it would substantially distort the market for something like Tesla, because Elon owns so much of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what's happening in Denmark, who knows? We'll stay on top of this particular proposal to see if it gets passed. If it does, it is an effective banning or attempt to cut off the exit ramp into the Bitcoin system. Incentivizes people not to use Bitcoin, because why adopt Bitcoin if I'm just going to get taxed for unrealized gains? And this goes along, like you mentioned, Lagarde tacitly acknowledging that Bitcoin is this exit ramp, not only for individuals, but for countries. And I don't know if you have it on the list, but the BRICS countries did meet this week. And I believe explicitly they talked about using Bitcoin as a means to settle trade outside of the SWIFT system. I know it was talked about. I don't know if they're agreeing to actually do it, but I think it was an idea that was another idea that was floated at the BRICS meeting this week. So not only is an exit ramp for individuals, the BRICS countries are appeasing it as an exit ramp for them to coordinate economic activity.
That was in Mandibles.
Yeah, Mandibles.
No, what's going to happen is, and I've said this before, but we have a lot of new listeners since we're on the eve of the greatest bull run of all time. What's going to happen is the BRICS countries realize they can't rely on the U.S. dollar because they have to trust the U.S. government. And the U.S. government has repeatedly shown that, first of all, we're heavily in debt. We're willing to debase our currency at will. All of our debt is denominated in our own shitcoin. And that we're willing to weaponize the financial system against our enemies, right? We've implemented sanctions, but we've even gone further than that. And we've seized sovereign wealth funds that are in the traditional financial system. So what are the BRICS countries going to do about that? The first thing they're going to do about that is they're going to try and just stand up their own alternative system, which is what we're starting to see happen now. But that requires them trusting each other. That requires, you know, Russia, China, and India all trusting each other on this new system. And that trust is going to inevitably break down. And that's the beauty of Bitcoin. Then Bitcoin enters the equation because it doesn't require trust in your counterparty. Two entities that don't trust each other can transact using Bitcoin. And it doesn't require that vulnerability, that element of trust. So as we see trust break down between institutions, between governments, throughout society, these trust minimized protocols like Bitcoin become more and more important, and the need becomes obvious to people, and then they adopt them.
Yeah, the BRICS buck is dead on arrival. I mean, you brought up China and India as they literally have border conflict right now. Like, they have a standoff at the border, and so to think that
they always do.
Yeah, I think that they're going to be able to agree on co-managing a fiat currency is far-fetched. Maybe they will agree to do it, but when push comes to shove.
I think the key is, I think they're in denial about it, and that's the most obvious thing for them to do first. So they're going to try it, and that's going to break down. And then they move to Bitcoin. I mean, obviously, the prudent move would just be switch to Bitcoin already. But they probably will have to try the other way and burn themselves first, and then move.
I got somebody texting me that they're moving their Bitcoin off exchange and they're having that moment where they're not seeing a balance on
it. I'm on Airbnb internet, so I was like, fuck, it froze.
No.
But it was just Marty just being quiet and still.
I was here in the room with Marty and I somehow was wondering, did the internet freeze? And I'm not seeing you anymore.
All right, moving along. We've got 30 minutes
here.
Thank
you, Logan. I'm not a crazy person.
That's on me. That was on me. Big product announcement this week from River. They introduced Bitcoin yield on U.S. dollar deposits, or interest on U.S. dollar deposits that is being converted into Bitcoin and given to users. Actually, right before Matt popped in the room here to do RHR, I recorded with Alex Leishman, and I'm pretty excited about this product because I think it is going to set a standard that forces others to do something similar, which is the fact that whether it's commercial banks or other entities that are holding cash deposits on behalf of their users, for some reason or another, have not been sharing the benefit of the interest that has been accrued on those cash balances with their users. If you have your money in a savings account at a bank, you're maybe making 60 bips when arguably you should be making 3-5%, depending on where that cash is stored. On a day-to-day basis, River has partnered with their banks to bring this product to Bitcoiners. We just recorded, and so essentially each individual, I believe, has an account associated with a bank, each individual River customer, and then their partner bank is keeping that money at the Federal Reserve overnight, reaping the benefits of the federal funds rate. And then Rivers taking the interest accrued from this cash deposits, turning it into Bitcoin every day, and then giving that Bitcoin to their users. So this is a great way to actually hold cash in account and get interest, and not only interest, but interest that is denominated in Bitcoin, which I think is a very important and wise product to launch.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you still hold dollars, you should, this seems ideal, right? It's like if you, I mean, and I've, a lot of us do have a, I mean, I personally, like I'm 99% in Bitcoin, and then I have a very small float that basically gets topped up to like pay my mortgage and stuff like that, right? And that right now is in a regular bank account in dollars, and it's making like no interest. But with this kind of product, then you can have it in River, and you can get paid, first of all, a higher return than you get in most savings accounts, right? What they're saying, 3.8% right now. That's subject to change based on market dynamics. And then you can get it paid directly in Bitcoin. Now, I think the paid directly in Bitcoin thing is, you know, it's nice. It's convenient, lowers friction or whatever. But if for some reason Citibank wanted to give me 4.2%, I would just take the 4.2% from Citi, and then you could just buy Bitcoin with it. That part is just a almost like an automation trick, right? Set it and forget it. You don't have to think about it. That does help people. It takes the emotion out of it. But I think we see this become more common. And I would say the next step, right, is because what did I just explain in my process there? For someone that's new to Bitcoin, maybe they only have, you know, 5% of their net worth in Bitcoin, 10% of their net worth in Bitcoin, and they're mostly in dollars, then obviously this is just a massive net win for them. But for someone who's trying to live on mostly a Bitcoin standard but still has fiat expenses and has this type of float situation and wants to take advantage of a higher return on their US dollars and also get automatic Bitcoin purchases with it, the key piece needs to be, I need to be able to like pay my mortgage and my credit card and stuff directly from that USD account, right? That's the piece that's missing right now, I think, from this River thing. Like there's no way, like I would still, if I had a River account, I would have to have my dollars there. And then when it came time to pay my mortgage, I would have to immediately transfer the dollars. I'd have to do another step to transfer to a different bank account that I had, right? Ideally, it'd be nice if this was just my bank account, and I can just pay my bills and the things that I need to pay with dollars directly from it and not even just skip that step.
Yeah, and that's on the roadmap, Alex. That's, I asked him, I was like, the biggest feedback I've gotten is I'd love to just do everything from the River account now. And so they're working on getting people account routing numbers, enabling ACH so they can do everything from
Maybe like account. A proper bank account, right? Like behind the scenes, it appears to be a proper bank account because it has that FDIC insurance on it, I believe with a lead bank. So it is a segregated bank account that you have. It just, and I of course, like I'm, you know, you got to iterate and build one thing at a time. Like I'm not trying to necessarily be a dick, but I'm just saying for my flow, right? Like that's what I would want to be able to do. I'd want to be able to pay, you know, my Amex, and I'd want to be able to pay my mortgage. And right now in this flow, you still have to send to a bank account separate from that.
Yeah. So shout out to the River team. Again, I think it's going to be a big product. I think it's going to have a lagging effect on basically perception around Bitcoin, because once you have a year's worth of data, 2 years worth of data of people putting their cash on River and getting interest paid in Bitcoin, you're going to have a track record, and then you're going to have this basically guerrilla marketing campaign where people that have done this for a year are going to be like, look, I put my cash in this account and got 5,000, 6,000, tens of thousands of dollars worth of Bitcoin, depending on how much cash you put in. And then look what I would have gotten in my bank account. I think that is going to be a great marketing tool for Bitcoin moving forward. And for everybody out there is like, why would you do this? And why are you not all in Bitcoin? Alex made a very good point during our conversation. That's like, yes, there's a lot of us in the industry are all in and don't have cash to put into this account. However, River's trying to meet people where they are and just offer a product that is a much lighter touch to get into Bitcoin. It lowers the barrier where it's like, hey, maybe I'm not cool with buying Bitcoin outright, but if I can put cash in here and just accumulate Bitcoin passively without making the active decision to part ways with dollars, it's just interest. That's meeting people where they are.
Do you see Garrett's comments in the Nostra live chat?
No.
Robinhood has something similar with 4.5%. I mean, I'm not a Robinhood user. Obviously, Robinhood doesn't automatically do the conversion into Bitcoin, but I think Robinhood has a debit card that's attached to it, right? So you can kind of use it more as a regular bank account. I wonder if Robinhood does have the FDIC insurance, because I would say like FDIC insurance is not really a scam. Like the government will back that stuff up. I mean, they might debase all of us to do it, but they will back it up, and the bank runs will continue. So if you have, you know, $200,000 in a bank account, it's nice to have FDIC insurance in America. Also, I don't trust Robinhood for shit. And if you're going to have a trusted third party, that's kind of important. But yeah, I mean, I think just in general, as we start to, you know, it should be interesting to see where interest rates go, right? Because we had been in such a low interest rate environment for such a long time. But if interest rates stay up, then people expect that, right? It's ridiculous to be getting 1%, you know, 1.5% on your savings when inflation's ripping, interest rates are high everywhere else. So you're like, you go to borrow money and you have to pay 5.5%, 6%, higher in a lot of cases. But when it comes to saving your money, you only get paid out at 1%.
Yeah. So beware, freaks. Beware.
I will say, I just kind of shout on Robinhood a lot. I'm still impressed that they do self-custody. You can withdraw from Robinhood. Never expected to see the day.
Yeah. All right. We got to get through this list. I've got to jump here in 20 minutes. Next up, we've got Spiral funding Spacebar for PageWayne dev kit work.
Space Bear.
Space Bear. What did I say?
Spacebar.
Space Bear. So PageWayne dev kit. Shout out to Dan Gould. He's really been leading that charge for many years now. For those of you who don't know, PageWayne is would make every spend a coin join, where when you go to pay a merchant on chain with Bitcoin, they would basically you would combine inputs to sort of masquerade the transaction to a bit and PageWayne is a dev kit that is trying to make this as easy as possible for people to implement, and so it's great to see Spiral funding Space Bear to work on this. As they mentioned, it would bring more privacy, fungibility, and scale to Bitcoin.
Love to see it. Nope. We have breaking news. There was a bug in Coracle, the Nostra client Coracle, that Hadelbod, the lead maintainer, has disclosed on Nostra. That resulted in Coracle sending your private key, if you signed in with it, to their bug reporting API, Bugsnag. Yeah, it's pretty bad. But yeah, so if you use Coracle, you might have been compromised. To be fair, his disclosure is pretty verbose. And I'm glad that he came forward with it. A lot of people would have just tried to cover that up. And if you signed in, obviously, with an extension or something like that, then your private key is not exposed. It's only if you pasted it directly into the web app.
Yeah.
But be aware, freaks.
Be aware. That's a pretty big one. Somebody linked to the disclosure in the Nostra live chat. So if you're on zap.stream, that note is there. All right, on to the Human Rights Foundation story of the week coming out of Burma. where major banks are complicit in junta's financial crackdown. Burma's major financial institutions, including Kanbaoza Bank, CB Bank, and Ayerwadi Bank, are facilitating the military junta's financial repression of pro-democracy activists and opposition figures. Since the 2021 coup, the military regime has actively used the financial system to freeze the accounts of citizens linked to pro-democracy movements under the pretense of preventing quote-unquote money laundering. This has severely hampered the efforts of opposition figures and activists to coordinate and push back against an increasingly authoritarian state. Under an authoritarian climate, the junta and banks have cut off thousands of citizens and businesses from their accounts and funds, leaving them subject to one-party rule that continues to ignore their struggles. If you want to read more stories like this, make sure you are subscribed to the Human Rights Foundation's Financial Freedom Report, which sends out a weekly email covering events like this, and you can sign up for that at financialfreedomreport.org.
I will say that Gladstein was just on the Mr. Obnoxious podcast, formerly What Bitcoin Did, and he did a really good job explaining why Freedom Tech is so important. Kind of like, I felt like he was explaining a lot of the ideas in my head, but doing it way better than I did. So consider listening to that. Obviously, Gladstein is head of Bitcoin at the Human Rights Foundation and chief strategy officer over there since the very beginning when I first launched. He was one of the early members. And then I also put a link. They're like running for some kind of award for their CBDC tracker. It's the same guys that do the Webby Awards. So it's like kind of a big deal to get like a lot of street cred if they win it. And I know specifically one of the things that they're competing with is like a anti-gun activist tool. So I would love to see them win. They do a lot of great work over there. So I put a link in the notes for you to go vote. I don't think that many people vote on these things. So RHR could push it over the needle. They're in second place right now. Consider voting. They're calling voting celebrate on the website.
Go vote, freaks. All right, on to the software update section of the show. Let's blow through this, Matt. Stop if you have anything particular you want to talk about. Core Lightning version 24.08.2 has been released. Remember an update channel hints. Datum Gateway version 0.2 beta has been released.
This is big. This is, I had the Datum guys, the Ocean guys on Scylla Dispatch. Consider listening to it. But the full open source stack is out there now, and people can run it, or they can look into it and critique it and submit recommendations or any kind of feedback. It's out there. Check it out, freaks.
Check it out. Next up, Stratum V2 SRI version 1.1.0 has been released with improved protocol crates, documentation, and more testing abilities. Wasabi Wallet version 2.3.0 has been released with a rewrite of Tor integration, UX improvements, and more. Nunchuck Android version 1.9.53 and iOS version 1.9.57 have been released. Nunchuck Desktop version 1.9.39 has been released. Bisc 2 version 2.1.2 has been released with optimized reputation system and chat consolidation. AlbiHub version 1.10.3 has been released. Zap.store version 0.1.4 has been released.
This is huge.
Huge.
Huge. I just told me to stop you. Zap.store, I think, is like one of the single Nostr projects that I'm most bullish on. It's a fully sovereign Android app store. I've talked about it before on the show. If you use Android, you got to download Zap.store. You can think of it like as an alternative to Play Store, alternative to the App Store. But instead of Google signing releases, people sign the releases with their Nostr keys. The developers sign the releases with the Nostr keys. You can be sure that you're actually getting it directly from the maintainer of the project in a way that doesn't require you to do like PGP verification or trust a third party like Google or Apple. It implements Web of Trust. The UX is quite good for an early project. So check them out.
Check them out. Had the pleasure of meeting some of the Zap.store team in Riga. Killers, very important project. Algo Relay, Nostr's first algorithmic relay, has been released.
This is cool. This is from UTXO. He's been doing a lot of work lately on different types of Nostr relays. And this is his first one. A lot of them had different Web of Trust elements, stuff like that. This is his first one that tries to implement a basically like a discovery kind of trending algorithm, which a lot of people are trying to do on like the DVM side and on the client side, but this is on the relay side, which means obviously it's much more lightweight on a user's device.
Yeah, UTXO says Algo Relay is the first Nostr native relay capable of serving personalized algorithmic feeds without the use of external or proprietary APIs or DVMs. Prioritizes service and content from the people you care about based on your personal interactions. Very cool to see. Go check it out. SIGET.io, document signing and verification.
This is cool. Nostr. It's DocuSign, but on Nostr, which makes sense. Like what DocuSign is seems so antiquated when we can be signing with cryptographic keys.
Props are due. I like this name.
It's a good name.
Shout out to one of the rare good named Nostr projects out there.
I see Garrett asking if it's better than Obtainium. And Ivan asking in the Nostr live chat in terms of Zap Store, with Obtainium, you're basically relying on GitHub to be verifying the signatures, because they know the private key of the developer that's uploading it, and they're downloading directly from GitHub. With Zap.store, it's all Nostr keys and everything is verified based on your own Web of Trust and their publicly known Nostr keys, which seems like a massive step improvement. I will say that Zap.store right now is like in the bootstrap phase. So it's not just Nostr apps. There's a bunch of different apps there, but there's way less apps on the store than you can get from like an Obtainium. And then even way less, both of them way less than something like Aurora, which is basically just a way to kind of incognito into Google Play Store, and that is not very secure at all. So there's trade-offs all the way down, but I think Zap Store is directionally correct and we're bootstrapping it. And I just want to be clear, like it's not just useful for people that use Nostr. Like this is useful for everyone. This is an issue that we see across the Bitcoin ecosystem and the greater Freedom Tech ecosystem, which is people want to easily download freedom-focused apps or any kind of apps. They don't want to rely on Google or Apple, but they do want to make sure that they verify, and they want to verify in a way that doesn't have much friction. Because if it requires friction, most people just won't verify. And that's what we've seen with PGP verification.
Make verifying as easy as possible.
Exactly.
Last but not least, Tor Browser version 14.0 has been released with Firefox ESR 128 new circuit option for Android and more. Does this have to do with the Firefox bug?
No, I think they already fixed that when Tor was the ones who disclosed it and fixed it right away.
Okay.
I believe when we disclosed the bug, it also got fixed.
This is the first stable release based on Firefox ESR 128. It's incorporating years worth of changes shipped upstream in Firefox. So it's a pretty big update. Beware. Tor. Update. If you're using Firefox.
Yeah, I mean, Tor is one of those things that you should just, you need to be on top of it. Be aware all the time.
Beware. This was a good tight rip.
Yeah, I feel like we do, you know, when we have time constraints, we... I see Charlie Spears in the YouTube chat saying that this Coracle bug is the reason he doesn't use Nostr because Nostr doesn't have key rotation. You know, key rotation is not an easily solved problem. And Bitcoin doesn't have key rotation.
Most Bitcoin keys are offline though. That's
okay. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that. I think it would be like saying you're never going to use a Bitcoin hot wallet for not having key rotation. And I would say that I actually think the way we solve it on Nostr is not key rotation, but it's, you know, multi-sig, Frost, something like that. Multi-devices, maybe hardware for high-value accounts where you have, you know, you have, instead of a single point of failure, you have, you know, you spread it out, similar to how we've effectively solved a similar concern on Bitcoin in terms of cold storage. And I think you'd have different values, right? It's like, if for some people, like just a hot wallet on their phone is fine, right? Kept in like the secure keychain or enclave on your phone is fine. And then for others, you know, if you're a big corporation or something, you want multiple people to sign off on any message that goes out, and you spread it out between them. But I think that's actually how we solve it, rather than through some kind of key rotation scheme. In the meantime, for most of us, you know, try and be practical about it. Like, you can reduce your exposure by not pasting your private key everywhere. You can have multiple private keys, right? So like, if one you value more, that's not the one you use to test new things with. And if we get compromised, you get compromised. It's like, what's the end? It's not the end of the world. Like, if I get compromised, the next week on RHR, I'm going to be like, I got my fucking Nostr key hacked, and now I have a new Nostr key. And we'll continue from there. Like, it's not, right now in the early days, it's not the end of the world. American HODL has like 15 X accounts because he kept getting banned, and it was just like American HODL 10. And there was no, like, he didn't like sign anything.
Yeah, just DM people, but like, it's really me. Go tell people it's like, really me.
We're shit posting and building this thing in production. But eventually what we're going to see is like, if nation states and stuff are using this, right? If we're seeing like government leaders using this thing as like their main public relations, then the solution, I think the solution isn't key rotation. The solution is some kind of multi-sign situation.
No. Building in production, shipping in prod.
I mean, do you remember when we first got into Bitcoin? Like, some of these guys are like, you have such privilege getting into Bitcoin later on. I think
I would assume that with Charlie, but.
But I mean, a lot of these guys, right? Like, the tools have gotten so much better. Like, they were shit. In the beginning, they were shit. And what happened? Like, people lost money and like all these things happened. Like, there was a lot of accidents happened. A lot of hacks happened. I remember using like the early like blockchain.info web wallet. Like, that shit was fucking horrible back in the day.
Election paper wallets.
Remember like the paper wallets, like you'd print out a single private key and then you destroy the printer because whatever's like, oh, you did it at your office and the office kept a copy of the private key. Marty, you have to read Boosts.
Oh.
Boost. Thank you, ChainDuel. Great Bitcoin and Nostr enabled game in the Nostr live chat, reminding me that you have to read Boosts.
Top four boosts. I wonder why he pinged us. Top four boost of Rabbit Hole Recap 327. Bitcoin bull run continues. Top boost from Sir Bitcoin, 80,000 sats. ChainDuel and Lugano, Plan B. Beta.
The best Lightning video game. No wonder you reminded us to read Boosts. I love it. Thank you.
Lightning video game is back at it. Win or lose, Bitcoin will be used.
That actually reminds me, before you do the last three, shout out to J-Mart, Ride or Die Freak, who ran a marathon.
Oh, yes.
And supposedly he did a boost like a half a year ago. When did he say he did it?
Exactly a year ago.
A year ago, where he said he ran a half marathon and encouraged other freaks to run a half marathon. And my response was, when full marathon? Which I guess I'm sorry, but also not sorry.
You lit a fire under his ass.
I helped creating some motivation here. But he has run his full marathon. And I will also say that he actually, it appears that he did two posts. He did one on Nostr where he tagged me, and then he did one on X where he tagged Marty. And Marty retweeted the one on X, and I reposted the one on Nostr.
I reposted the one on Nostr too.
Okay, but the one on Nostr got significantly more engagement than the one on X. And supposedly X claims that they have 10,000 more users than Nostr. It's, you know, impossible.
That's it? Only 10,000 more? That's crazy.
10,000x, 10,000 times. But significantly more engagement on Nostr on that post.
Yeah.
And he got zaps out of it. But anyway, shout out to you, J-Mart. And I'm sorry that you know, we read a lot of boosts. I appreciate all the support. That one hit me in the feels that you've held on to that.
You're motivating people. I like it. I like anger marathon runs.
I don't even remember. Do you remember that boost? I mean, like, no. That's clearly something I said. Like, that's completely, that just does not surprise me that I said that. But okay, continue. Sorry.
Ape Mitch Randier, 77,777 sats, sevens across the board, Ballindrome boost. Why is not paying out bounty number 9 to ? Currently, there's a bounty for a Frost multi-sig wallet implementation in the amount of 1 Bitcoin. Stack Wallet started work in September 2023 on a Frost multi-sig wallet implementation and has had a compliant version in their app since February of this year. They applied for the bounty, and it has been 8 months with no decision from HRF. There are a few comments in there. Let me see if there's any. Why is HRF not paying out bounty number 9 to Stack Wallet? That was his addendum to the boost.
I don't know. You got to ask HRF, but I would say that personally, I don't like running bounties. There's just always some shit. Yeah. It's hard to be objective and award people. Some people have proposed doing bounties through OpenSats, and we have a 9-person board. Our board members outvote me and decide we want to launch bounties, they can, but I don't think they're that effective. I mean, they can be effective, and Gladstein with HRF is very proud that two of the bounties that he had paid out previously, one went to JB55 pre-Nostr days, and the other one went to Cali in the beginning of Cashew, so kind of. And the JB55 one was like kind of Zaps related before Nostr existed. So like there's HRF bounties that kind of led to Nostr Zaps and Cashew, which are both massive developments in the space. So I don't want to completely undercut the importance or significance they can have. I will say for those bounties, he delegated OpenSats to decide who won those. And that's the most fucking annoying part. that's the part that sucks. And that was the part that taught me, I was like, I don't want to run any bounties going forward, because everyone has, you know, there's like different elements to it. It's like, who gets paid? How did they actually qualify for it? Is it just a technicality? Is it this? Is that? But anyway, Ape Myth Render, thank you for being a ride or die freak. Thank you for bringing that to everyone's attention. I hope it gets resolved amicably across the board.
Agreed. Fade, 10,000 sats. Appreciate you guys. Marty, you should read Mandibles. Marty should read Mandibles if he hasn't already. I'll think about it. Fade, I'll think about it.
Do you realize that Mandibles first came up on this podcast 6 years ago on that American HODL rip?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
When we had American HODL and we got fucking wrecked. And it was the building, it was your apartment building's like lounge area, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
6 years ago.
We got wrecked.
Yeah, and you still haven't read it. Paul Tudor Jones has read it.
I'll think about it. Blockchain Bug, 5,000 sats. Herman Cain, RIP, was a Republican candidate who pitched the 999 tax plan. That was me, maybe a little racist. I said it was Ben Carson. It was Herman Cain.
Oh, yeah.
My fault. Hand up.
Black Republican.
Yeah, it was on me.
999. I mean, I like... Fuck 999, just no income tax, no cap gains, no income tax, no, just tariffs only.
It's being floated. So, it's being floated.
Do you think it'll actually follow through on it?
It would be awesome. I don't know. I don't
do
know.
Do you want to bet?
No, I don't want to bet because I imagine you'd have to get this through the House, the Senate, and get it on his desk. I find that hard to believe.
I mean, I will say that I strongly support no taxes.
Ron Paul came out and endorsed it yesterday. So
you can put just no taxes, tariffs only, and then just debase the fucking currency, right? Just print, plus tariffs, no other taxes. It'd be great too from a privacy perspective, because tariffs are not like all, pretty much all other taxes rely on a surveillance state to enforce them, but not tariffs. You just have to, you know, spy on Chinese imports or whatever. It's not on the actual end user. Yeah. Mexican imports, Chinese imports, Canadian imports, European imports. Just tariff the hell out of it and just take away all taxes. I will say that there is absolutely zero chance that happens. And I'm happy to bet.
Not going to bet.
I support it.
Jesus, please, if you're listening.
Yeah. My favorite tax plan is 000.
Yeah.
There we go.
All right, you heard it here first. I got to jump. Got to make sure my friend is getting his Bitcoin off the exchange appropriately. He seems pretty worried right now, so I feel like I should give him a call.
I wish him the best of luck. Stay humble, stack sats.
Peace and love, freaks. Okay.